This is when they start telling us that we may have to take the whole thing, the whole half a brain.
Welcome to Made Us. I am your host, Zach Weaver. Tonight's conversation was a humbling one, but one that's extremely inspiring. My guest this week is Derek Nicely. Derek and I had a great conversation, and one, as a parent, that'll leave you teary-eyed. This conversation goes way off in the weeds at some points, which is just the way I like it. But the tone definitely changes when Derek starts to explain the worst day of his life, and as a parent, one of his worst nightmares. This episode really has some really emotional parts, so I'll warn you now, get the tissues ready. And I'll also tell you, this episode has some really silly parts. So, be prepared to laugh, because it's all coming at you. So if you like this episode of Made Us, or any episode of Made Us, go on to Apple Podcasts, leave us a 5-star rate and review, and let us know how we're doing. And make sure to share the show with a friend. That's a huge thing for us. Sharing the show with a friend really helps this show grow. And it truly means the world to me by you sharing it. Also, if you want to keep up with us on social media, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/MadeUsPodcast or on Instagram and Twitter at MadeUsPodcast. And feel free to reach out to us at any time at MadeUsPodcast@Hotmail.com. But by far, make sure you subscribe to the show, rate and review the show, and share the show with a friend. So I really have to thank Derek for coming on tonight. Derek was extremely genuine tonight and opened up about something that's hard to talk about. And that's your child's health. The story Derek tells about his daughter Morgan's trials and tribulations is an absolute roller coaster, and one that'll make you realize things aren't so bad. So here is my conversation with Derek Nicely. Mr. Derek Nicely, thanks for joining me tonight, buddy.
Thanks for having me.
I'm glad you're here, man.
That was a fun drive in.
Yeah. How long was it for you?
20 minutes.
That's a haul.
Well, you know, I walked out the door. It's bright outside, so I grabbed my Elvis Presley sunglasses.
Those are really nice. Yeah, I like those, by the way.
I got them at Graceland.
Did you really?
Yeah, it's the only place to get Elvis Presley sunglasses if you want to be authentic. I mean, that's a lie. You can get them anywhere. But, you know, I was at Graceland, and I had to get the Elvis Presley sunglasses.
They do look good.
Yeah, they're badass.
They're pretty badass. You're a big music guy, too, right?
I am, yeah, I do.
And kind of that era, right?
Yeah. I'm a honky tonk guy, a honky tonk guy. So like the old George Jones and Elvis isn't honky tonk, but you know what I mean. Johnny Cash.
Yeah, I get where you're going with it. Carl Perkins.
Sun Studios guys.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah,
you're a big traveling guy too, right?
Yeah. I like to get around.
Yeah,
I get around.
You get around. So I know Vegas is kind of a spot you hit a couple times too, right?
Yeah. I mean, me in Vegas, we have some stories. We have some stories.
I have not been there.
That's, oh man,
that is a place I really want to go. We had my wife and I, who you actually know pretty well.
Yeah,
my wife and I had a deal. So my wife and I have been together since we were 19 years old, and we had a deal that if we didn't go to Vegas by the time we turned 30, we would go to Vegas for our 30th birthday. Our birthdays are a month apart from each other.
Oh,
so we were probably maybe 25 at the point that we made this deal. And time goes by and we don't go to Vegas. And finally, it's getting close to like our 30th birthday. So we're like, okay, we're going to go to Vegas for our 30th birthday. And she ends up pregnant. And it's like, well, fuck, we can't go to Vegas now. Yeah. I'm like, that's not fun. You know what I mean? We could, but that's not fun. That's half of Vegas.
That would ruin Vegas. Yeah. I couldn't imagine going to Vegas and not drinking.
Yeah. That's half of Vegas.
Yeah.
I think. I mean, I guess. I don't know. I haven't been there.
I think it's a little over half of Vegas. I think it's like 85% Vegas.
That's funny. So let's tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
That is the toughest question you're going to ask me today.
Oh yeah.
Cause a Derek is nobody. I don't know anything about myself, honestly. You know, I got married fresh out of high school, had some kids, part of the reason why I'm here today, I suppose. And now I've been working for a long time for Four Winds Casino.
Nice.
And I travel, like you said, and I like wrestling, and I'm sure I'll make some sort of bad dad joke or make some sort of wrestling reference that nobody else is going to get except for me and a handful of people. Yeah. But I do that on purpose because it entertains me.
I might get it.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
It's pretty like out there stuff.
Well, I like that. I like the out there, the jokes.
But yeah, I mean, the music stuff, the wrestling stuff, the traveling stuff, like that's me.
Yeah.
I'm just a honky tonk.
So what do you do at Four Winds?
I work in, I'm surveillance. I'm the surveillance operations manager. So my job duty essentially is I watch people who watch people who watch people. I'm like the third level of watching
people.
It's
a lot of watching people.
There's a lot of people watching that happens.
And for people that don't know, Four Winds is a casino local to us, but it's also what? It's got like the second largest gaming floor in the United States crazy.
It's huge and nationwide. It's one of the big ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's
the biggest one outside of Vegas, I want to say.
It's almost, it almost spoils you having it here.
Oh, yeah.
Because I do this, you know, I've gone to a few other casinos and a few other places and you're like, what the hell is this shit? <You know?
laughs> Yeah. And see, I work at the smallest property. So it's like, okay. It's weird.
Yeah.
Because I worked in New Buffalo for a long time.
Yeah. Which is the big one.
Yeah. Which is, the mothership, as a lot of people call it.
Yeah.
And that's where I was during the story that we're going to get into later through that whole time. But now, like, I'm in the smallest one, which is kind of funny to go from the biggest one to the little one.
Yeah.
Because everything is just so tiny and cute, like a little baby.
So you said you were the. What'd you say it again?
I was the surveillance operations manager,
The surveillance operations manager.
Yeah, they haven't walked me out yet.
So you are just watching people. So you are watching the other surveillance people watch people.
yeah. So you have the operators who watch people. And then we have supervisors who watch the people who are watching people.
Yeah.
And then I'm the manager who watches the supervisors who are watching the people who are watching people. So
that's pretty gnarly.
I also like to go around and tell everybody that I'm the face of surveillance because I'm like one of the few guys that like other departments deal with.
Okay.
So that's the fun thing for me.
Yeah. That is funny.
I go around telling them, like, yeah, I'm face of surveillance right here. Don't talk to those guys. I'm the one you need to talk to.
It's amazing looking around those places. Not that I'm trying to scope out a casino, but you just kind of walk around and look and you're like, there are fucking cameras everywhere in that place.
And now you're on a list.
Yeah, probably. If this doesn't put me on a list, I've been on one for a while.
Well, now you're on another list.
As many guns as I've bought and ammo as I've bought.
And now you're on the list twice.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is most of my listeners know that I'm a competitive shooter. And if they don't know, I mean, most of them do not by this point know that I'm a competitive shooter. I've bought, I mean, probably hundreds of thousands of rounds of ammunition. And you'd think that would put me on a list somewhere.
You would think.
But I don't have any of it because I shoot that much.
Oh, well.
Like I train for competitive shooting and I shoot all the ammo I buy. So literally, if you go to my house, I might have 100 rounds of something.
Maybe there's a secondary list. We're like, okay, we see that they've purchased said rounds of ammunition, but we also see that they're competitive shooters. So chances are they don't have all those rounds.
Yeah. You want to get weird for a minute?
Oh, I love getting weird.
Are you into the belief of the lists?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I am too.
I think there's a lot of lists.
Yeah, I sadly do too.
I think for every major thing that people are scared of, there's a list of people who they think might be on it.
Yeah, I agree.
That could do something crazy like that.
I don't mean to be like a weird conspiracy guy, but I totally kind of believe that there's some lists out there.
Oh,
wow. I definitely got to be on one at least.
I kind of am a weird conspiracy guy, so I'm probably also on a list for just thinking that some of this stuff is real or hilarious.
They just see your Google searches?
Yeah. Oh, God, that'd be a dangerous thing to look at.
Have you watched the new Bob Lazar documentary?
No.
It's on Netflix.
What is this? Oh, it's on Netflix. I'll watch it then.
Okay. So Bob Lazar is basically the original whistleblower for Area 51. He was the guy that came out in the 80s basically saying that Area 51 was this. And at the time, no one knew that it existed. And he's basically the original whistleblower for it. And they have a new documentary that's coming out or that came out. It's on Netflix. I watched it the other day. Pretty weird. It's pretty awesome. I was trying to explain to Michelle my beliefs in it, which is they are what they are.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't necessarily like, well, basically my belief is with the whole thing is I believe that Bob Lazar believes he saw what he saw.
Sure.
I think he saw something he wasn't supposed to see. I don't think he saw what he thinks he saw. Could
be. Perspective is a powerful thing.
It is.
It really is. And he probably thinks that that's exactly what he saw.
Yeah, but it's a weird. He could
probably pass a lie detector test.
Oh, he probably could. But he's like the original, like, I don't say he's the original UFO guy, but he's the original Area 51. He worked at Area 51 and he was the first employee to come out and say, yeah, I work here. This exists. We're doing stuff, you know. So,
but that's even more interesting because he was an employee.
Yeah, it's called Bob Lazar, Area 51, and Flying Saucers. It's on Netflix. Not that this is a promo for it. Not sponsored by him. Nothing like that. But it's pretty interesting, especially if you have any interest in it. Now, I'm not a big alien believer, UFO believer.
I don't
but
know where I am on aliens.
I enjoy the entertainment value of it.
Sure. I mean, I think the term alien is like up for interpretation too.
No, it really is.
Because I mean, you think E.T., you know, you think Elia. Yeah. Elia. but you know, I think an alien could just be some sort of microorganism somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm sure they exist.
Oh no, with that being said, you know, like I told you before, growing up in a science-based household, there's no way that there's not some sort of life out there. But sure. That doesn't mean it's Marvin the Martian.
Yeah. They could have 18 million eyes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like eyes and a few tentacles so they can move around. Who knows?
Now that's going to turn into a soundbite saying, I believe in aliens. So yeah, you and I are both, you know, we both have some silly interests, which is awesome. Like I said, I watch weird UFO documentaries and we both have been sitting here. We talked for probably 7-8 minutes before we started, all about wrestling.
Yeah, wrestling.
Wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is pretty all over the place. You had a wrestling podcast or something for a little bit, right?
I did for a little while. It's kind of out there and wherever.
Yeah.
Wherever land.
It lives out there.
It lives. Yeah. It's not gone. I mean, you can go watch the 7 episodes we recorded. All you want is on YouTube and all that good stuff. But yeah, just really passionate about wrestling and more about the historical evolution of wrestling and like who's good and who's not.
That's awesome. You know, it's nice to have these weird outside hobbies too, because that's another thing that kind of binds us is we're both fathers.
Yeah.
We both have children, and that's kind of what
Do you want two more?
Do I want two more? Yeah. No, I was trying to pawn mine off on you.
Oh no. I mean, I thought that was like part of the deal.
Oh
like,
no.
Oh man.
I'm not taking two more. Oh. I got two I'm trying to get rid of.
So I guess we're done here then.
Oh, all right. Well,
we've reached an impasse.
That was the end of that. But that's kind of why I brought you here is you have a very unique and humbling yet inspiring story through fatherhood with your daughter, Morgan.
Yeah.
So I won't get too far into it because I kind of want to let you tell the story, but I want to get into it. Your daughter had a major medical issue when she was younger, and I want to say it wasn't epilepsy, but what was it?
It was Rasmussen's encephalitis.
Okay, and what is that?
That is essentially an autoimmune disease.
Okay.
Which some, I'm going to get super technical here. This is my technical voice. Some blood-brain barrier thingy-ma-bobber. Oh. Boom. She got a high fever, basically. Some bad organism broke the blood barrier or something.
Okay.
And then terrible things happen afterwards.
That's
not like
rough.
Immediately afterwards, but like, you know, weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
How old was she at this point?
Oh, you know what? I knew you were totally going to ask that question. Let me math in my head real quick. She was 5 going on 6.
Okay.
Yeah, she was 5 young when it started, and by the time we did the whole shebeel, like we're talking the shebang. Shebang. Oh, baby, you move. She moves. Sorry.
It's all good.
You got my William hung on.
I like it.
But yeah. By the time we, spoiler alert, took half her brain out, that was when she was 6.
Okay. So yeah, she was very young through this. Did you know anything was wrong right away? I mean, how long did it take for you
to
realize something was going on?
So like at the very beginning, it started off like a flu. Like she just had the flu on Father's Day of 2010.
Okay.
Yeah, 2010. And so you didn't think anything of it. You just thought she had the flu and her fever got up to like 103 and, you know, packed her in cold washcloths and all that good stuff. And the doctor's like, yeah, that's what you got to do. We got to keep that fever down. And then like a day later, it was gone.
Okay.
And that was what we learned, you know, later on was the beginning.
Really?
Yeah.
So the fever broke pretty quickly.
Yep.
And as a parent, you're probably thinking, oh, we're done. We're in the clear.
Yeah. I'm like, sweet. That was just a terrible weekend. And
yeah,
now we're off to better things.
And that's when you kind of figure out, I mean, obviously in hindsight, that's where you figure out that kind of the moment that this organism broke that barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened next with that?
So I'm going to lie to you and say it was like a week or two later, because I don't really know the exact time frame. But within a few weeks, we just realize that she's like not paying attention when we're talking. And okay. you know, as a dad, you know that like kids are really good at doing that anyhow.
Oh yeah.
So at first it was just like, oh,
especially at five.
Yeah. Yeah. She's just really into the Teletubbies or whatever.
Okay.
It wasn't the Teletubbies. I'm sure that's too old. I'm going to guess it was like Yo Gabba Gabba or something.
Oh boy.
Or the Wiggles. The Wiggles were my favorite, but no, she, you know, she's just staring off towards the television or whatever and just ignoring, you know, us talking to her. And after a little bit, we realized that, you know, that's not, it's beyond normal because, you know, you try to bring it up a few notches and like, hey, over here.
Yeah.
And nothing. She just staring off. So, what I learned, because I know nothing, I never did anything medical in my entire life.
Yeah.
And probably never will, because I'm getting a little old for that. but we learned that was like one of the many different ways that seizure activity presents itself.
Okay.
It's called like, I'm going to butcher that, so I'm not going to say it. But basically, it's just dozing off, staring off in space, and then it lasts for a few seconds, and then boom, you're back.
Yeah, it doesn't have that very like violent reaction that you would
think it
does.
It's not the stereotypical seizure. It doesn't have the jerking. It doesn't have the twitching, the drooling, or any of that craziness.
Yeah, and how often do these events happen? I mean, was it something noticeable right away? Was it like a one-time event? Did it happen a lot?
So like at first, it was slow. Okay. Like, not really sure how many times it was happening because it, like I said, it was hard to tell.
Yeah.
But they increased more. So the more they increased, obviously the more your awareness raises and
you're like
something's wrong. So, and you know, from there we just kind of followed the chain how you normally would, like something's wrong. All right, we gotta go to the doctor. So we go to the doctor. Well, we ended up at the ER for Lakeland,
okay.
a local hospital chain here. And then, you know, they kind of put you in and they admitted her and kept her for a couple of days. And I mean, she's eating her spaghetti, so it's time to go home, right?
Yeah.
there's nothing wrong with this girl. And then they basically figured out that they're not equipped to deal with that at Lakeland. So yeah. It's like, all right, you know, what you really need to do is you really need to go up to see the fine folks at Bronson and Kalamazoo.
Yeah. We've been sent up there a couple times for different things too.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's where we ended up. We ended up at Bronson. Then at Bronson Hospital, you know, they start doing their same tests. That's the fun part is, you know, you got to do the same tests everywhere because apparently medical officials don't like to share
records.
Yeah, our equipment's better, so we would like to do it too. Or they're just after money, but that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But so then we, you know, we go the Bronson route. That's when it started to get a little scary.
Okay.
Because at Bronson, they start talking like they're not capable of dealing with it.
Really?
Yeah.
So do they have a diagnosis at this point? Or?
At this point, they knew it was something epilepsy related.
Okay.
But they didn't know it was Rasmussen's encephalitis because there's no test for Rasmussen's encephalitis. That gets tough to say after a while.
That is pretty rough.
But the only way to figure out if somebody has Rasmussen's encephalitis is to basically rule out every known illness.
Oh, wow.
To the brain, which is probably a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine that's a lot.
Yeah, so they knew that it was epilepsy, so they figured there was like a spot or something on her brain that needed to be removed. So when we're in Bronson and Kalamazoo, we're thinking that we need to remove a tiny speck of brain.
Yeah.
Which is already scary.
That is very scary, especially as a parent.
Yeah.
You know, being that your daughter is 5-6 years old, she has no clue what's going on, really. So, you know, it's obviously still a little scary for her to be in the hospital, but as a parent, I mean, I can't imagine my son, and this is nothing compared to what you went through, but my son just went through some kidney issues and we got sent up to Grand Rapids up to they have a pediatric kidney doctor and we had to go through this whole ordeal. And it was to the point that they're like, if we cannot nail down what this is, we have to take a kidney biopsy. And, you know, it was like one thing after another, and it's terrifying as a parent to have your child go through this.
Yeah, just when you say it, you're instantly, I'm like,
yeah.
Like, I'm standoffish, like,
And luckily for us, we didn't have to go through that. So he had some abnormal levels in his urine, and basically what it ended up coming out was the levels are abnormal, but they are below a level of concern. So basically, we have to continue to have him monitored, but at this point, it's not a level of concern. It's just some abnormality.
Sure. All right. So it's like you're good for now.
Yes. Yeah. Which is still, like I said, the whole incident was scary. So I can't I can't even fathom what you guys went through.
I don't know. I don't know how we made it, but it was just one day at a time type of thing.
So you're at Bronson, and you think that you're going to have the speck removed.
Yeah, and but then the pediatric neuro person. I should have looked up these names is what I should have done.
No, I like it. I like it like this.
Yeah, I'll just make them up as I go. I know she's not there anymore, but she wasn't sure how much or whatever, and she wanted us to go to Detroit.
Okay.
To meet with the doctors up there. That takes a level of commitment to be willing to drive, you know, 3 hours to go. But, you know, you're talking about your kid. And
yeah.
And Dr. Shigani was Morgan's doctor's name in Detroit. It helps when he's like, his program is like one of the top three in the nation.
Yeah, that is.
So that's like, oh.
Gives you a little peace of mind.
We quickly stopped thinking about trying to shift gears and go to Chicago because it was closer.
Yeah. No, that definitely gives you a peace of mind.
Yeah, so that helped. And then, you know, by, I think we're August or September of that year, we're making visits up to Detroit.
Yeah.
Up to the D.
How regularly did you have to go up there?
Oh, man. Frequently.
Yeah.
Like, I'm gonna lie and say it was at least twice a month.
Yeah.
That we're going up there to do like random tests, you know, the fun stuff where they put, she hated these, the with the ones where they put the stickers all over your hair.
Oh, yeah.
All over your head. And then they do the EEGs. There we go.
Okay.
Bam. So do the EEGs, and then she really hated it. There's like some gunk. They get some gunk on a Q-tip, put it in her hair, and she doesn't like her hair messed with anyhow.
Okay.
And they put all these electrodes on, and they just measure brainwave activity.
Yeah.
To catch the seizures, I would imagine.
And that's what they're basically looking for, is an episode to happen.
Yep. And then from there, it was trying to figure out where at in the brain it was all starting from, where it was, you know, figure out the focal area so we can take it out.
Yeah. So it doesn't have a standardized spot, really.
No. Brains are funny that way.
Yeah. I don't really know. I mean, I draw pictures for a living and I love what I do, but the brain is a weird,
weird
beast.
Even the medical physicians who mess with brains all the time, like there's still so much not known about the brain.
Yeah. So at this point, at home, have the episodes gotten worse, or are they staying the same?
So yeah, at this point, since we're just at up in Detroit, we haven't done any of the surgeries yet. So it's still more of the same, but increasing in frequency.
Okay.
So you're noticing it more and more every day, and realizing that it's not really, things can't continue this way, you know, because she'd wake up and have some seizures, and then that just ruins your whole day.
Yeah.
Because after you've had a seizure, from what I can tell and what I've read, is that it's exhausting, and people need to rest to recover from all that mental strain. So it wasn't going well. So we ended up there, and by August, that's when they decided that we needed to go ahead and have a two-stage surgery.
Okay,
we needed to go in and put electrodes on her brain instead of on her scalp.
Really?
Yep. Yep. It was this whole thing. They called it mapping.
Mapping.
Yep. They put this grid, and this was kind of cool and kind of scary at the same time. Everything's kind of cool and scary in this story at the same time. But they put this grid on, like, in her skull, on her brain, and then attached electrodes to that. Then they spent like 2 or 3 days just like doing random like quizzing, like nothing difficult stuff that she'd be able to get, like raise your right hand, raise your left hand, do this, do that. You know, what's 2 plus 2? Because they needed to see what areas of the brain controlled what.
Okay.
So they did that for a couple of days. Then it was time for the first resection. They figured out through the mapping that it was like a frontal lobe thing.
How did they break that to you? Because, I mean, that's got to be a weird thing to like, oh, we're going to come take a chunk of your daughter's brain.
And that is weird because, like I said, when we started this and like, June, it was a tiny speck,
mm-hmm.
and now we're already up from a speck to a part of the frontal lobe. But at least now we know a location.
Yeah.
But now it's also like, oh, it's probably going to be a little bit bigger than a speck. And you're just like, well, you know, you see what life's like at home, so you know that going home is without it is not really an option.
Yeah.
That helps a lot. There are no other options.
Yeah.
At this point, it's like, well, we do this, and then, you know, the seizure should stop, and then maybe some medicine, and then you're good.
Do they give you any, like, insight on what? So the way I'm envisioning this is is, as a parent, you don't know what to expect. So did they give you any insight on what her functionality might be after this? Because that would be my first concern, would be like,
sure. Yeah, they right away from Jump Street, they're all like, hey, you know, we're going to do this. It could cause weakness of her left side. Wait, right side. Got to remember what's that, the brain we're moving here. it's going to cause weakness on her right side because it's the left frontal lobe that they were messing with. And that it's going to potentially cause some speech issues. All that was discovered from all the mapping stuff they
okay.
did. So yeah, I mean, they warned you, but at the same time, like,
well, yeah, what are you, you know,
yeah, what are you going to do? Like, oh, wait, no, time out.
Yeah. You have very, you have very limited options at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
But just, I just am taking in as a, you know, from what I see as a parent, you know, that'd be a huge concern. Even though you said, even though, you know, there is no option, you still have that concern of like, is she going to be a functional human being at this point?
Yeah. And they were really good at like, at communicating, that, hey, like we've done way, way more things. And, yeah. and these kids that normal every time it was like, hey, you know, we do this and everything could be great and no more seizures and you probably won't even need medicine, but maybe, you know, maybe for a few years, kids grow out of it type of thing. You hear yeah. that a lot when people talk about epilepsy and seizures, like, oh, I had that when I was a kid and I grew out of it. So they kind of spun things like that. And, you know, that's not really incorrect of them to do. That was the right thing to do.
So we get into this first surgery. So what did you call it?
Glenda, the good witch.
That's what you called her brain?
the mapping, when they did the mapping? The frontal lobe resection?
Resection?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. That's what they like to call them.
Okay.
I didn't realize I used that word.
Yeah, so. I'm learning new things every day. I like it.
I did too 10 years ago.
So this is the second part of this surgery, right?
Yeah, it's the second part of the two-part initial surgery. There's like a bunch of these. So
yeah, well, we'll get there.
So yeah, that was the second part, is that they go in and it took like 3.5 hours, and then they come back and they get us and they're like, hey, just so you know, everything went great. We got the portion out. And,
yeah.
And you're just like relieved, because going into it, I mean, they're operating on a brain. Anything yeah. can happen.
Yeah. And at this point, this is probably the longest 3 hours of your life.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I remember sitting in the waiting room and I remember playing dumb time wasting mobile games.
Yeah.
I don't remember which ones, but
so what I don't know if we brought up, but I know that we've said you have multiple children.
Yes.
Have you included your other child? I mean, obviously not in a decision, because the decision is sure. not there, but have you included him in any of this? Does he have any idea that any of this is going on?
That's a fantastic question. I was wondering, I would love to hear from him, like how this went, because I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. He would only been 7 at the time, and he knew we weren't around.
Yeah.
And my sister was staying at the house with him and making sure he got to, you know, school and all that good stuff. But yeah, that whole like year is like almost like I wasn't home. Like I he could have not went to school and I wouldn't have known.
Yeah.
So from his point of view, I just think that in my head, he just knows that his sister is sick and we're out staying in Detroit and getting it taken care of.
Mom and dad are going to take care of it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, you know, first grade first grade.
Yeah. That's tough. That's tough to be going through that. So as a sibling, trying to be thinking of that, like, you know, your sister's sick.
Yeah.
But you don't, you know, at 7, you're not understanding that one bit.
Not at all.
Like, I'm 34. I don't understand it now.
Yeah. Yeah. The more I look back at it, it's, you think about some of those things now in the heat of the moment, I didn't have time to think about those things.
Yeah.
And I'm glad I didn't have time to think about those things, because I probably would have been even more mentally drained than what I was. I just knew that he was with my sister and my brother and my dad or whoever. I knew they were going to take care of things. And
yeah,
if there were any issues, then I would hear about it. But so I just kind of left him with my family and
went along with it. You just had to do what you had to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he was playing soccer at the time too. So, you know, soccer practices and games and all
more
that good
more.
Stuff. Yeah.
So you get through that first surgery, second surgery. Well,
we'll call it one, but yeah, it was part two of the first one.
What are you feeling as a parent at this moment?
You've relief.
Yeah.
Because at this point I was thinking we were done. I'm thinking, hey, everything's great.
Yeah.
We did what they said that we needed to do. It's out of here. And we're going to move on. You know, she didn't have any weakness in her right arm. She didn't lose her ability to speak. So all the things they warned us about weren't issues. So, I thought we were out of the woods, and it was just like that first flu. The bad times are over, and it's time to move on. Within a couple of days, she started having more seizures. So,
oh, geez.
Yeah. So then we kind of continued and did it all again.
Yeah.
Then they went in another time, and then they ended up taking out just a larger chunk. And this was like days after.
Okay.
This was like days. So if I said a couple of weeks just a second ago,
yeah
that was a fabrication. That is fake news.
It is amazing. I've talked about this a few other times, and I know some of my listeners, I do have a lot of crossover listeners with Truth and Justice. In Truth and Justice, they talk about the way the brain works and how, you know, it's funny you say that, how your brain works is the brain wants to connect the dots. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it will do that, even though you're thinking, you know, it might have only been a couple of days. You're thinking it's a couple of weeks. You know, it wants to connect the dots.
I'm good at always saying a couple of weeks for everything.
Yeah, I'm really bad about that too. My go-to is just the other day.
Yeah.
That's the one. Just the other day.
I think I was like that, and then I moved to a couple of weeks.
A couple of weeks.
When that happened. Oh, that was a couple of weeks ago.
So they go in for a secondary surgery now to remove another...
Yeah, to move a larger portion of the frontal lobe.
Wow.
Yeah. And then after that one, then we did see some of those signs that they had pointed to. There was weakness on the right side.
Okay.
She did... I don't want to make it sound like she completely lost the ability to speak, because I don't think that was accurate. But I recall that she started struggling with speaking and answering questions, simple stuff like, you know, what her name is and things of that nature, things that she knows. There are also those were the questions that she would answer or was asked to answer during that mapping episode.
Okay.
So some of those same questions she was... having a hard time.
She was having a hard time answering him and having a hard time actually saying the answer. Like,
with yeah, like you could tell she knew the answer.
Yeah.
But it was like.
How to formulate the words.
Yeah. Like I'm doing on this, most of the show where I'm like, I got diarrhea of the mouth and I can't spit out what I want to spit out. But instead of rambling, she just would sit there like it's on the tip of her tongue, but can't.
Yeah.
Can't find it and get it out there.
So now do you still have that same sense of relief, or are you.
At this point, yeah, I mean, it was not really,
yeah.
You know, you thought for a brief period that like you were done, and then it's not done. And it's, you know, it gets very disheartening that you can't cross the finish line and can't put this all behind you.
Yeah.
And then it's just back to the drawing board. Like, what do we do next? Oh, let's do more of those electrodes she hates. Let's put those on her brain again.
So she went back in for more of that.
Yeah, more EEGs, more 24-hour VMRs. They like to do that, which is essentially an EEG, but also you're recorded on camera.
Okay.
So they did some more of that stuff. But, I mean, they sent us home. I mean, there was nothing more we could do at the time.
Yeah. So at this point, they've taken a very large portion.
Yep. Yeah, well, about the front quarter or so.
The front quarter.
Yeah.
And they send you home.
Yeah.
Have the symptoms, I mean, I don't want to say symptoms, have the issues kind of resolved themselves at this point? Or are they still there?
They're worse.
They're worse at this point.
They're worse. And in fact, this was probably the hardest time of the whole thing.
Really?
Because the seizures start happening so frequently. We started keeping a seizure log. So like every time she had one, start time, end time, how did it present? Because guess what? Now they're also not the same thing. They've changed. They don't look the same anymore.
Really?
Yeah. They like to look different. They're not always consistently the same.
You come out of this surgery, especially the first surgery where you felt like, oh, we're through this. And now you come out of the second surgery and she's worse off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't fathom the heartbreak that I would be feeling to have that happen. Especially when you know that there's nothing as a parent that you can do to help.
Yeah, that was one of the worst things, but also one of the best things. Because you couldn't do anything, you know, all you can do is be there, be present, and be supportive.
Yeah.
And by golly, that was about the only thing I could do, and that was the best thing I could do. Now, I think, yeah, before they sent us home, this is a story that has to be told. This is one of those moments that I told you that I can still see it with my eyes. Like it doesn't go away. So after the weakness from that surgery, the quarter resection, they send us over to the rehab unit. you know, because they can't just send you out the door. Yeah,
they can't just boot you out the door.
So we're over in the rehab unit. The rehab unit is for not sick children. The rehab unit is for people who don't have health issues. They're just there to rehabilitate an injury or something.
Which makes sense.
Yeah. So, you know, there's no IVs. There's no this. There's none of that normal stuff that you have when you're dealing with a serious medical incident. But she's still very sick. She still has these seizures. They're still happening. But she still has to go to her rehab stuff every day, speech, physical therapy, all that good stuff. And one day, you know, we're all just sitting around and we're like, got to make her take her bath. And she's still a kid, so she still hates her baths.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, it's something that has to be done. We ended up going like down the hall to like bathing her in the tubs, like where like they do like the burn unit stuff.
Oh, wow.
And I don't exactly remember like why we were down there giving her a bath, but like that's where we went to give her a bath. And then when we were down there, she starts having a seizure. And it was the worst one ever of all time.
Oh, jeez.
Hands down. And we're nowhere near where we probably should be to get any sort of help. So not only is she having the seizure, like it's not stopping, which is what makes it so bad. Most of her seizures were like 30 seconds. Like this one is now over 2.5 minutes.
Wow.
So we're at the other end of the hall. So we do what you're, I guess, what you're supposed to scoop her up. And I don't even remember doing this, but it's what I read that Heather wrote that I did. So I'm going to claim that's what I did.
Yeah.
So I picked her up and I carried her back to our rehab room and like put her in the bed, still having her seizure. And then went to go get help. But even still, they're not equipped to do anything because it's not a normal hospital room.
Yeah.
It literally just has a bed and TV and stuff in it. So it continues to get worse. And, you know, we're getting up there in time to where, you know, serious consequences, including death, occur. They ended up calling a code over the hospital speakers.
Yeah.
The room starts very quickly filling up with people. I end up like, there's like 30 people in this room. There's a lot of people in this room.
Yeah.
And this is that hopeless feeling because I know nothing. I'm just standing in the corner by her bed as her bed is surrounded by these 40 nurses and doctors. And then her mom, cause her mom's a nurse, is like on her bed with her.
Yeah.
Like calling out instructions, almost like telling people what to do. Cause all these people who just jumped in the room don't even, this is going to sound like it's a knock on them, but it's not. Like they just showed up at the room. They just got called for a code. They don't know what they're walking into.
Yeah. They're unaware of the situation.
And Heather, a nurse, is very much aware of the situation and what needs to be done. So she's there assisting, and me know nothing. I'm cowering in the corner because there's nothing I can do. So me, growing up with, you know, the faith that I have, I said a little prayer because I can't do anything else.
Yeah. What else do you have?
It's out of my hands. And by the time I was done, her seizure stopped. And looking back, like, it's just like that moment, the worst moment of my life, we got through it. I'll never forget it. And it really, I don't have bad days anymore.
Yeah. That's something that'll stick with you forever.
Yeah. Yeah. There are no more bad days because basically we're pushed right up to the brink of death. So there's only one thing that's worse than where we were.
Yeah.
No more bad days.
That's intense, man.
Yeah. That
is really intense.
That was a tough one. That was a tough one.
Wow. Yeah. That floors me.
Yeah. Probably shouldn't have been in the burn unit doing, giving a bath.
Yeah. But like you said, as a parent, you're just doing, you know, you're just giving her a bath. Yeah,
a normal thing. Like we just want to do a normal activity.
Yeah.
And they didn't have normal outcomes ever. I mean, we go to the store, you go grocery shopping. And I remember specifically being in Walmart, looking at a video like, oh, let's get a movie. American tradition here. We're going to go home and watch a movie.
Yeah.
Having a seizure right there. Like life was so difficult.
Yeah.
Because, and then, you know, because I don't know anything, all I know what to do is, oh, I'll grab my phone and I'll record it. Because by doing that, I didn't know I did this, so I don't want to sound like I'm a genius, but by doing that, I'm catching her seizure activity. The doctors can look at my video and
yeah,
see how it's presenting, learn stuff from my video, and then it also has, you know, a rough idea of how long it lasted. It was about the only good thing I ever did.
Yeah. Was that, I mean, did you think to do that, or were you told to do that? I wouldn't think to do that, well, but know, I mean, it makes sense, but I that was something that I wouldn't even considered.
I got to give credit to working in surveillance.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I was doing for a living, is yeah, pointing cameras and watching things. So I just thought, like, I guess, hey, something's happening, I should record this.
Yeah.
I'm going to learn more from recording this than what I'm going to remember to say. You know, because, you know, some doctor's going to ask, what happened next? Shit, I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't Here's know. An idea. Here, you look at it. You tell me what happened next. Yeah. Because the blinking eye is going to mean more to you than it's going to mean to me.
No, that makes sense.
And that's kind of how that happened. And so, I mean, through doing that, we were able to capture a lot of different ways that her seizures were presenting themselves.
That's a great idea. And I never would have considered that. That's something that I wouldn't think of. I will now, but
I don't know how I thought it. It just happened. Yeah. It just happened.
Wow. So they've sent you home from the second surgery at this point. Clearly things are worse.
Yeah. I wrote down some stats on that one. We're talking like from that seizure log, 8 pages of seizure logs over 3 to 4 weeks, having 150 seizures.
Wow.
So I'll give you an idea what a day was like. Wake up, have breakfast, have a seizure, go to sleep, wake up, start to watch a show, have a seizure, go to sleep, repeat every day.
Wow.
That's what life was.
So, I mean, so there's no chance for her to go to school at this point.
No. She lost out on a whole year of school.
Man.
And just because there's funny stories about that too, because, you know, truancy officers are things.
Yeah.
and like they have one in the hospital. And they want the girl in school, but
yeah,
like, she's not, like, they don't understand, like that, like, you can try to teach her something, but like it's not
happening.
No, she's gonna have a seizure. She's gonna go to sleep.
Yeah,
and you're gonna be talking to a sleeping child. So thankfully, she also wasn't of an age where she, like, it was mandated she had to go.
Yeah.
So thankfully, the problems worked themselves out. But that could have been ugly.
Yeah, that could be really ugly.
She was a mean lady, too.
Yeah.
No, I see her coming, I go the other way.
that could have been a really tough situation. Luckily, like you said, she wasn't at a point that she was mandated to be there.
Yeah.
But yeah, she definitely lost out right there.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, being a kid, you know, you're going to school, you got all these friends.
Yeah.
And then you get sick, their lives continue. They're still going to school. You're not. Now, when things get better and you go back to school, you're not even the same grade anymore.
Yeah, you have a whole new life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. That's tough to think about.
Yeah. Her story continues.
Wow.
Her story continues.
Well, let's continue it. So at that point, you're past that second surgery. Things are going really bad.
Yeah.
I mean, have you thought about a next step at this point?
So at this point, the next step was to continue to do what we've been doing. More EEGs, more mapping. Well, not mapping yet, but more EEGs, more 24-hour VMRs to see where it's coming from now, because they had removed all the areas that they were starting from before. That's when things get complicated, because theoretically speaking, if you have this brain and bad things happen in this area and I remove that area, the bad things should go away.
Correct.
But when the bad things don't go away, that means they're coming from somewhere else because I removed that part.
Yeah.
So funny thing about the brain is it likes to teach itself things. So it continued on, it spread to areas of the brain that were still there.
Wow.
Yeah. And then they had to do the test. There's one, I guess, disease that is like real bad.
Okay.
I believe it's called Alpers. Essentially, the brain will teach the epilepsy stuff. This is hard to put into words now. So with Alpers, the area that starts the seizures, that triggers the seizures, it'll teach the other areas to mimic that activity and
Wow.
essentially make it spread. With Alpers, it will move from one side of the brain to the other.
To the other.
To the other. So now it's like, oh, so now we have to worry. Like, this is when they start telling us that we may have to take the whole thing, the whole half a brain. But first they wanted to make sure that it wasn't Alpers that could spread to the other side. Half. Because there's no, like, there's no cure for that.
Yeah.
Or at least there wasn't 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, and they're probably still, I mean, if it teaches the whole brain, you can't take the whole thing.
No, that much remains that you still can't take the whole brain.
Yeah.
That's very real. There is a test for Alpers, thankfully, and she did not have it.
Which has to be a relief, a huge relief.
Yes. Yeah.
There's not, in this story, there's not a ton of relief for you, but at least you have those momentary reliefs.
Yes, there's a lot of little moments of relief, and then you're like hit with a dose of reality. Like, yeah. Oh, no, we're buckle up, son. We're not done yet. So at that point, we now know that she doesn't have Alpers, but the idea of taking an entire hemisphere is still not one to be taken lightly.
No, absolutely.
So around December of 2010, we go... Well, I don't go. I'm working because, that's the other funny part about the story is you still have to go to work.
Yeah.
You still have to make a living because bills don't stop coming in. People don't stop wanting your money magically.
Yeah.
So that's why I almost feel like indebted to Four Winds for like seeing me through the worst part of my life.
Yeah.
Where I would do anything for him. It's just, that's just me, I guess. I'm loyal, super loyal guy. Where was that going? That was weird. where was I going with that?
We were talking about the removing the whole hemisphere.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. They went to Chicago. I was explaining why I didn't go to Chicago. I was trying to win the Father of the Year award here like 9 years later. So they went, Morgan and her mom went to Chicago and I stayed back to get a second opinion.
Okay.
They went to like the University of Chicago Children's Hospital.
Okay.
Still got it. And then they met with the doctors there and they didn't redo all the tests. They just kind of looked at all the information because there was tons of information at this point.
Yeah, I can imagine at this point
there's like novels probably of information here. And like the doctor sat down and went over the stuff. And a big moment in Heather's journey during all this, the doctor said to her that like, you need to make a decision that you can sleep with at night. Cause the options were do nothing. And we've already talked about how doing nothing was not an option or take the hemisphere. So there were no options. Like that's
no
really
options.
All you had to do. And again, I like to throw back to June. This was supposed to be a tiny speck.
Yeah.
And this tiny speck has now grown into taking a whole hemisphere. From June of 2010 to December.
Of 2010.
Yeah.
Yeah, it went from a speck to half of her brain.
Speck to a half a brain.
That's intense.
Yeah. Lots to digest in there. Lots of good things, lots of bad things.
Yeah.
And then, yep.
And I can imagine that it's all hit you like a freight train.
Yeah, yeah. And then on top of it, that December, my grandfather died.
So it just continues to pile on.
Yeah, it was not fun.
Yeah.
It was not fun. And then January of 2011, I'm nervous.
As you would be.
Everyone's nervous.
Yeah.
We got to go do the surgery. We got to do the whole mapping thing again. So it's another two-parter. We got to go in there. We got to put I don't even know why. We're just taking it out.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they did. They had to map it again. It's January. It's Michigan. Like, we know what happens in January in Michigan. So I'm not looking forward to driving to Detroit in the winter.
Yeah.
There's just nothing that sounds fun about that for me.
Not at all.
Nor what we have to do when we get there. And of course, as fate would have it, snowstorm. So I'm now white-knuckle driving the 3-hour drive to Detroit, which is now 6-hour drive to Detroit.
Oh, jeez.
It was miserable.
Yeah.
It was miserable. I will never forget that either, just because, like, ugh. Snowstorm on 94, because you're on 94, like, the whole way.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah, white knuckle, whole way. Not fun. But then we get there, they do the mapping, they do all that good stuff. And another weird thing about the hemisphere surgery is it took, like, way longer.
Really?
Yeah. Took like way longer. And I don't get that either. But they explained it like they had to like be careful not to leave like even a piece, like if they leave a chunk, like then it could still,
that could continue to spread.
Yeah. So they had to very, very precisely get in there and cut out that hemisphere and take it. And when you talk about taking a hemisphere too, now that weakness we talked about,
yeah,
and that speech loss that they warned about, now that's very real because now she can't talk.
Oh man.
And now that arm and that leg, like they don't.
Yeah, they're not functional.
Yeah, they're not functional at first. And so then you're talking about a long stay in rehab. And I don't remember how long that was, but that was a while. But they did warn us that the mobility would come back, that she would get shoulder, elbow, knee, but the further you get away from the body, the less would come back.
Okay.
So it's kind of like people who've had a stroke.
Yeah.
You know, they have some weakness in that arm or that leg, or and that's kind of what we still live with today. She has, you know, she can move that arm up and around, she can do all that good stuff, but when it comes to fine motor skills, you know, with her fingers, it's not. She can squeeze things. That's something that exists. Walking, limp. Other than that, normal. You know, she likes to run around still and play all those fun games. Well, Max was a floor hockey guy.
Yeah.
I used to Morgan would be like, I'm going to play. Because before all this happened, Morgan was a sportster.
Yeah.
She loved her soccer. And like, there's no doubt in my mind that if this wouldn't happen, Morgan would have been going through the floor hockey.
Yeah.
She would have been damn good at it. So, you know, we're out there, we're at Max's practice. She wants to go out there and play. She wants to go out there. Like, she doesn't get why she can't go out there and play.
Yeah.
And a lot of times she'd just find an empty corner of the gym and just sit there and play by herself with the hockey stick and the hockey puck. Because she doesn't know.
Yeah.
She doesn't know any different. This is her norm.
Yeah. And as a parent, you would never tell your child they can't do it. At least I say that, you know, it's one thing to tell, you know, to not allow them, but sure. It's another thing to like, no, you are not doing this.
Yeah, that has been some decisions that I've made that are probably not the best decisions.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like the floor hockey thing, I wouldn't let her try.
Yeah.
You know, you blame this. You want to keep her safe. You know how those kids are when they get out there. Yeah. They're super aggressive.
Oh, it's super rough.
And you know, her balance is not great, especially then. I mean, it's a little bit better now, but I mean, nothing I'd write home about.
Yeah.
Accidents would happen. I mean, maybe if I was wrapped her in bubble wrap completely, but then how are you going to move?
Yeah.
But just making choices like that continually where I, quote unquote, for her safety, I keep her out of things. And now I'm learning that, like, I'm holding her back.
Yeah.
I'm holding her back. Her friends already moved up a grade on her. They're already a year removed from her. And now I'm stopping her from making new friends because I'm scared.
Yeah. And that's a tough realization.
Yeah. And this is a recent realization too. Yeah. This is a recent realization. And I don't know why it took me so long. I guess I'm stubborn, you know. I guess us dads can be like that.
Oh, fuck yeah.
We can be a little stubborn. The only thing I really let her do was like Girls on the Run.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I realized that Girls on the Run is great, but there aren't a whole lot of girls that do Girls on the Run. There really isn't any reason why I can't let her go and sign up for the basketball team. She can go travel with the basketball team.
Yeah.
Are they going to put her in? No, they're probably not going to put her in. But she doesn't have to play. You don't have to play to be a part of that team, to have those relationships with the other players on the team.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
That's what I've been robbing her of. And I am now making steps to stop robbing her of those opportunities because this is her normal. She just wants to go out there and be a kid.
Yeah. It's hard to let your kids do that.
Oh, boy.
It's super hard to let your kids do that.
Especially when in October, you sit there on the third and almost watch her leave.
Yeah.
If that didn't take her, playing basketball isn't going to do it.
Yeah.
You know, letting her join the softball team or anything. Join them all. I don't care.
Just yeah.
Go out there and try to have some fun.
Exactly. Have fun.
You can
be a kid.
Yeah. You can keep stats in the book. That's still a thing, I would imagine.
No, it is. Yeah. Just be a kid.
Yeah.
Have fun. Man, that is powerful, man.
Yeah, it's been a jersey. I just let her go to the park today by herself. I've never done that before. Never.
Yeah.
I mean, she, part of the stuff with losing that whole hemispherectomy is she has like a vision cut.
Okay.
So like, I'm going to lie because I'll never figure it out because, you know, she's a kid. And when you try to get a kid to do something that even resembles a game, they're going to cheat to win. So I tried to figure out where exactly her vision cut is. But I think it's about 33%. So I think like if there's something, you know, just off to the right side, like I think she misses it.
Yeah.
And that can be dangerous. That can be dangerous. You know, that's a car. You go to cross the street, that's a car.
Absolutely.
You know, so part of that whole journey as after we get home is just like relearning day-to-day life, how to, you know, look, we call it scanning, you know, how to scan for things. You got to always scan, but there'll be stuff. It's kind of funny now. It's going to make me sound like a dick for laughing about it, but you know, there'll be the remote. We'll be sitting right next to her.
Yeah.
Hey dad, where's the remote? Really? Did you look? Scan for it. It's right there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, well, that's embarrassing.
Yeah. But as a parent, you really need to push these things.
Yeah. They always said, you know, she'll be able to drive and all that stuff. But I tell her you're not going to be able to drive. I'm not that vision field, man. You can't.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to drive like that? You know, not scanning. That's going to be Joe on the street corner.
Yeah.
And who doesn't know that the person driving the car has a severe vision cut.
Yeah.
And like, it's just for her safety, for other people's safety. That's just not something that I can back down on.
Yeah. No, it's tough as a parent. It really is.
I don't know. Maybe other hemispherectomy kids didn't have that.
You always want to do what's best for your child.
Yeah.
And sometimes what's best for your child isn't the easiest thing to do.
No,
it really isn't.
Especially around here where like driving is like everything.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the gateway to freedom.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise what do you know, you're at home. Yep. It was all about either a friend getting a driver's license or you getting a driver's license.
Somebody's got
to drive. There's no public transportation. So.
Oh, you're right, man. This has been an incredible conversation tonight and I really appreciate you joining me.
Well, man, it's something. Another reason why I don't want to make it sound like I like going through that conversation, but it's something that's necessary. I have to do it, and I have done it, parts of it, to keep me grounded.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'll be at work or something, and I'll just be having a shit day. And then you remember what a shit day is like.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then suddenly, your day's not so bad.
Absolutely right there.
Those FTP reports you got to do, they don't really... They don't matter anymore.
Yes. Did you get that memo?
I did.
Okay, good.
Thankfully. Because heads were going to roll if I didn't.
So, the way I wrap up every episode is I ask for one piece of advice.
You do.
So, if you had one piece of advice to give everybody, what would that be?
It might get a little long-winded if I...
You do what you got to do. Okay. It doesn't matter. I don't care.
Because it boils down to two things. Positivity and it's a matter of perspective. So, long-winded story, here we go. While we're in the ICU, like after the hemispherectomy, and we were in the ICU for a few days, maybe a week tops, you're sad.
Absolutely, as you would be.
ICU is not a happy place.
It really isn't. I've spent some time there, not for myself, but I've been in there and I know.
Yeah, so nobody's happy. Nobody's positive in the ICU. Or at least you wouldn't think anybody was positive in ICU. Yeah. But lo and behold, while we're in ICU with Morgan, we're sharing a room with a newborn baby named Max.
Wow.
Which is crazy because that's Morgan's brother's name.
Yeah.
And the two people that we are sharing this room with, Max's parents, are the most positive people I have ever met in my life. Their newborn, who's in ICU and, you know, not a good place to be, has Down syndrome and has a hole in his heart.
Wow.
Max's parents like make trips around the ICU unit, meeting, talking, and consoling all the other parents.
Really?
Meanwhile, they have their own child right there.
Yeah.
And I mean, I I don't know how that story ended for them, but it didn't sound like it had a good ending coming.
That's rough.
So I learned so much from them that in their darkest hour, they were a beacon of light, a beacon of positivity, and just going around talking and praying with people. They were, cause they were, they were spiritual people and lifting others up when they were down. So to me, the things to remember from this, to be like that, to be that beacon of light, to be positive, not to be a grumpy Gus is, you know, yeah. I get that way still a lot here lately. So this was a much needed time and reflection for me too, but also to remember that sometimes even your worst day, like you're having a, your tattoo client cancels on you.
Yeah.
That sucks. Cause you know, you're probably counting on that money and all that good stuff, but everybody's healthy.
You're right.
Everybody's doing good. So yeah, that sucks, but the level of suck is low.
Yeah.
That's low on the suck scale. That's a thing. I just created it.
A suck scale.
I'm going to create a suck scale. So it's all about perspective. You know, like at the time when all this was going on, I was driving a 95 Cougar and I was so done with my 95 Cougar. I mean, I look back at it lovingly now because it was with me for so long, but I was driving this old car. There's a ton of people who don't have cars who could need or want or would have loved to have a car.
Absolutely.
And here I am complaining about it. Who am I to complain about anything anymore?
Yeah.
So really, it's just, it can always be worse.
It absolutely can.
It can always be worse. You just have to keep your head up, keep fighting, never give up, and always maintain some sort of, even if it's buried, you can be grumpy. You can be grumpy. I mean, I'm grumpy. But at the end of the day, you know, you gotta, there's gotta be something that pulls you back to that gauges just how, and the level of suck, how, you know, what something was. And from October 3rd, 2010, I can tell you that most things don't measure on my gauge anymore. If I can remember to put it on the gauge.
Yep. It's all about putting it forth to yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's really it. The power of positivity. I mean, somebody smart said it. You say you either can or you can't, and either way, you're gonna prove yourself right.
You're absolutely right, and that's a perfect place to end it.
It is.
So thank you for joining me tonight, buddy.
Thank you for having me.
God damn it. No, we're so far off topic. This is good. This is really good. I don't even remember what we're talking about.
I don't either. I was just kind of thinking, like, how do we get here? I know where we're at, but like, how do we get there?
Yeah, I don't know. It was good though. Now I gotta give me a second. I gotta think where we were.
Good luck, all that's like useless too.
Oh yeah, all that was useless, which was good. I was talking about Bob Lazar,
yeah, yep,
and UFOs and believing in that and not believing in that.
And I don't know how, like, we got to that point.
Yeah, I don't either.
That's going to be a tough edit.
Nah, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. That's where that. Jesus.
And now you lost
where you were. No, I got where I was at. Okay. I was waiting.